Here are some American voices speaking about freedom of religion.
Well, currently there's a lot of tension in America over religion. It's similar to when the Irish came here and they had tension with the Protestants, and now it's the Muslims having tension with the Christians. But I think these things will be overcome over time.
It's important for people to be able to have religious freedom because everybody has a different higher being. And I know who I believe in, and I think everybody should be able to believe in who they want to believe in.
Free thinking is important to me, and that the ability to worship or think in the ways that are best suited for your life and experience are important to me. The U.S. believes that it is special in its religious freedoms. Whether it actually is exercising a tolerance of diverse religions is something that it continues to try to work on.
You know, people should just be free to just, you know, think, you know, believe what they want.
Because I'm against religion, so I want to be free. In fact, there's a, have you heard of the Freedom From Religion Foundation? Yeah, I'm kind of like with them.
I value religious freedom. As a Buddhist, I believe everyone should has the right to believe whatever they want to believe without any kind of reaction from the community or the government.
I don't want people making me practice their particular religion, and I would rather just be able to investigate any religion I'm curious about or have no religion at all if I want.
I don't really pay much attention to it. I just think that you should be able to believe in whatever you believe in.
I think that basically most people in this country don't value religious freedom because they take it for granted. They don't come from countries like in Eastern Europe where you've been forbade to practice religion. So I think looking at it from that perspective, I think it's hard for an American to appreciate religious freedom because we get it so easily.
I think it gives a person a chance to express himself in a free country.
And freedom of your thoughts in spiritual matters, as all other matters, is a foundation for kind of a democratic society. I have to think that there is still some uniqueness to the American experience that clearly historically has valued freedom.
Welcome to Religion and the Constitution. This is a series of conversations about the law and what freedom of religion actually means in the United States. My name is Jerry Dunkley. Hello and welcome. This series of podcasts is designed to outline some of the law of freedom of religion in the United States. There are conversations with legal and historical experts dealing with several aspects of the law. To put our later discussions into some perspective, let's start with a brief history of the early settlement of what became the British colonies and eventually the states. This is not meant to be a complete retelling of those times, but is intended to offer an overview of some of the general trends from about 1600 to the beginning of the American Revolution, and then the first 100 years or so of the Constitution. If you wish more detailed information about this history, there are, of course, hundreds of books and websites that offer details about each of the eras we'll outline in brief here. So this is a quick skimming of some of the issues that relate to religion and the Constitution. Let's start with the early white settlers. The white Europeans who sailed to the Americas 500 years ago came for many reasons. Some of the Europeans who came to North America in the 1600s came to be free of official religious oppression from the monarchies and the church, which was the standard in much of Europe. The Anglican Church in England also repressed faiths that seemed to threaten their dominance with the direct approval of the kings. But many who came were explorers, like Columbus, paid to seek a new land for their kings and queens. Some were seeking wealth and treasure in the New World. Some left Europe because they were escaping wars or the Inquisition, and they feared for their lives. The early settlers then came for many reasons. Religious freedom was important for some, but was not one of the only motivators. As the 13 colonies were settled by England, various religions emerged. In New England, it was the Puritans. In Pennsylvania, the Quakers. The Dutch Reform in New York, the Catholics in Maryland, etc. There was a sprinkling of Jews, Hindus, and Muslims. In the English colonies, it was common for towns to tax people to support the Anglican Church, the official Church of England. Public money paid for clergy, buildings, etc. There was religious oppression. In New England, those who disagreed with the church were banned, like Roger Williams, who then went on to found Rhode Island. So, for instance, one of my ancestors was kicked out of a local church in Massachusetts for stealing a horse. Some of those accused of witchcraft were killed. The Native American spiritual traditions were called paganism and oppressed. The various colonies had differing degrees of religious freedom. Jump ahead now to the mid-1770s. As you know, the pressure was growing for a revolution to push Britain out of the colonies. Documents in the Library of Congress show that churches played a significant role during the revolution. There was a clear schism between the Anglican priests, who had sworn an oath to the crown, and those who wanted to be free of any official religion. Clergy who supported England declared those who wanted the revolution as apostate, that is, they were to be shunned. But many Anglicans supported the war against the British. Presbyterians, Quakers, Methodists, and other churches were in favor of the revolt. The Anglican Book of Common Prayer, which had prayers to the king, was rewritten or changed to take out mentions of the monarch. Quakers believe in pacifism, but some Quakers took up arms against the British. So religion, through many mostly Protestant sects, played a significant role in the fight against the Redcoats. Some preachers went so far as to argue the revolution was the equivalent of a holy war against the evils of the king, and that America was ordained by God to be free of the British. Of course, the colonists won. Remember, we're skimming through years of a complex history here. After the Revolution, the old Articles of Confederation were insufficient. The newly liberated states needed a constitution. Representatives from the 13 new states met in Philadelphia to craft the document we still govern ourselves with today. When it came time to create the U.S. Constitution, a majority of states refused to approve the new document without a Bill of Rights. In simple terms, the Constitution outlines the powers the government has. That's what it may do. The Bill of Rights specifies a number of things the government may not do. For instance, it can't legally take away your right to a fair trial or jail you without a publicly stated cause. And the Bill of Rights included the First Amendment, which clearly says Congress shall make no law in relation to the establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof. In short, the government would not have an official religion like England did, and the government wouldn't tell you how to worship or what God to believe in or to choose not to be involved with religion at all. James Madison and Thomas Jefferson led the fight for making sure there was no official religion in the new Constitution. One of their ideas was that private religion can thrive when there is no entanglement with or control by government. Jefferson was something called a deist, someone who doesn't favor organized religion. Madison was an Episcopalian, but many historians consider him also a deist. A deist is someone who believes in the power of the natural world and not in divine revelation. Deism was an idea that came out of the scientific discoveries of people like Isaac Newton and Galileo. Jefferson and Thomas Paine, the firebrand whose writings were so influential during the Revolution, for instance, thought that the miracles of the Bible were fantasies. Traditional theologians at the time of the Revolution rejected deism, of course. When Jefferson left the presidency, he actually wrote a different version of the Bible where he took out all of the miracles and the idea that Jesus was resurrected. It's known as the Jefferson Bible. Jefferson and Madison were both from Virginia. As the new Constitution was being written, they were very clear that they wanted no official religion. A few years earlier, they were able to get freedom of religion put into the Virginia Constitution. They wanted citizens to be free to worship as they chose. The words in the Virginia Constitution, passed in 1786, were the forerunner of the religious freedoms enshrined in our First Amendment. Jefferson wrote the Virginia law, and it says in part, and I quote, "Be it enacted by the General Assembly that no man shall be compelled to frequent or support any religious worship, place, or ministry whatsoever, nor shall be enforced, restrained, molested, or burdened in his body or goods, nor shall otherwise suffer on account of his religious opinions or belief, but that all men shall be free to profess and by argument to maintain their opinion in matters of religion, and that the same shall no wise diminish, enlarge, or affect their civil capacities." End quote. That was a quote from the Virginia Constitution passed by Madison and Jefferson. Political unity was clearly part of the motivation for freedom of religious belief in the new country. As we've mentioned, there were a number of religions practiced here, and clearly part of the intention of the First Amendment was to prevent the new government from taking sides in issues dealing with religious belief that could cause a schism among the various faiths. As you know, Jefferson and Madison won. The First Amendment was adopted by the states as part of the Bill of Rights in 1791. Let us note here that Article 6 of the Constitution itself says there can be no religious test for public office or public trust under the United States. That means that anyone of any faith or no faith could serve the federal government. It wasn't until 1961, in a Supreme Court case called Tarasco versus Watkins, that having no religious test for a public office, a job, or a government-required license was extended to all state and local governments. So today, there can be no test for religious faith for being eligible to run for office or to get a government job or license. Now let's go back to the period just after the Bill of Rights was ratified in 1791. Even though the First Amendment clearly said no establishment of religion, several of the state's own constitutions continued to have an official state religion. In fact, Connecticut was the last state to change its constitution to align with the First Amendment, and that was in 1833. The United States was growing rapidly to the west. New religions were being created, like the Mormons, the Unitarians, various Baptist sects, Christian Scientists, and several others. Immigrants were bringing their own religious beliefs to the new country, especially Catholics. But most of the power in religion remained with the mainline Protestant sects, the Episcopalians, Methodists, Presbyterians, Quakers, Congregationalists, and others were the most influential. In 1861, the South seceded from the Union. Though it isn't discussed very much, the Civil War brought religious faith into play. The Union side used religious morality to argue slavery was evil. Abolitionists used religious faith to support the elimination of slavery. Many churches in the North were very active in the support of the Union cause. They protected escaped slaves, and ministers preached for the end of slavery. After the Union won the war, Catholic immigration emerged as a powerful and divisive issue. Starting just before the Civil War, but mostly in the years after the war, Protestants became fearful about Catholics, particularly the Irish, and their religious influence in the United States. At this time, some states and towns still supported Protestant religious schools with government funds. The Protestants worried that tax money would go to support new Catholic schools that were being built around the country. The issue became so intense, there was a serious attempt to amend the U.S. Constitution to prevent any public money from going to these schools or any sectarian school. The attempt at amending the federal constitution was called the Blaine Amendment. It was named after James Blaine, who proposed it with the support from Ulysses S. Grant. It failed, but it was close. It passed the House, but died in the Senate, losing by just 4 votes. But it remained a powerful issue. During the period just after the Blaine Amendment's loss federally, 37 states passed changes in their own constitutions to prevent tax dollars from supporting any religious schools. These are known as mini-Blaine Amendments and have become more controversial in the first part of the 21st century. You can hear about that period and the current issues in the podcast with Lyle Denniston. The first major Supreme Court ruling on the Free Exercise Clause in the First Amendment came in 1878. It was a case based on the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, usually known as the Mormons. The Mormons had settled into the Utah Territory before it became a state, and their faith said men should marry several women. There was a U.S. law against polygamy, but Mormons practiced it anyway. Eventually, the church decided to challenge the federal law in the courts. They claimed the Free Exercise Clause protected polygamy. A church elder named George Reynolds agreed to be the test case. He was convicted in a territorial court and sentenced to 2 years in prison. He appealed. Reynolds versus the United States was decided in 1878. The court said the First Amendment protected religious belief, but not action. The court unanimously said that polygamy was an action that the government had a right to restrict. So polygamy was declared illegal with the court ruling that a religious belief was not as important as the action of marrying several spouses. The Supreme Court ruled the federal law against polygamy could indeed be enforced. The mainstream Mormons had encouraged the practice, but following the Supreme Court decision, and because Utah wished to become a state, the church decided to prohibit polygamy officially in 1890. Utah became a state in 1896. Now here's a more recent update. The reality TV show cast of a show called Sister Wives challenged Utah's anti-polygamy law in 2013. A federal district court judge sided with the cast and ruled against some parts of Utah's law. That judge's decision was overruled by an appeals court, and the Supreme Court refused to hear the case. That meant the law in Utah against having multiple spouses remains in effect. We have skimmed through 300 years of U.S. history in relation to religion. As we said at the beginning, every issue we've discussed is complex, and there is more detail in fact about each one. The intention here is to offer a sort of quick primer about the religious experience in the colonies and the new states under the Constitution, up to the first major Supreme Court decision concerning religious freedom. Let me repeat that there is much more about each event, each religion, at each government action or lack of action. But I hope this will give you an idea about some of the history and its impact. Each of the following podcasts with experts will give you a deeper dive into some of the many issues surrounding religion and the Constitution. I hope you will listen, and thanks. Religion and the Constitution is meant to offer a brief history of freedom of religion in the United States. It's intended to help you interpret what freedom of religion means in everyday life. These conversations with the legal experts and the narration will not answer every question about what the courts have said about religious freedom. They do attempt to give you a basic understanding of the law. Nothing here should be taken as legal advice. If you have a problem concerning religious freedom, you should contact qualified legal assistance. Thanks to Josh LaBella for helping with the research and street interviews. And thanks to Tedra Schneider for creating the theme music. And thank you for listening. I'm Jerry Dunkley.